Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Harab Mir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, there are two subjects I want to speak about briefly. First is the horrific decision of Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, to agree that Jews have no rights on Har HaBayit, on the Temple Mount. Netanyahu entered into an agreement with the Jew-hating Secretary of State John Kerry, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, may his name and memory be obliterated, and the Nazi King of Jordan, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. He entered into an agreement, Netanyahu, that states that Jews have no rights on Har HaBayit, that the Muslims have complete control over Har HaBayit, that only Muslims can pray on Har HaBayit. No non-Muslim is allowed to pray on Har HaBayit. Netanyahu is not only completely caving in to Islamic terrorism when he does this, because he's basically begging the Muslim Nazis to stop stabbing and murdering Jews. And he's saying, you see, we're giving you the Temple Mount. We're giving you all the religious rights. We're saying that Judaism doesn't exist, that Jews have no rights. This is what he's saying. This is the Chilul Hashem, the desecration of God's name that is taking place right now. The Temple Mount, Har HaBayit, is the reason why God brought the Jews back to the land of Israel after 2,000 years of exile. The Temple Mount is the reason for our existence. It's the reason why you were born. You're in this world because of the Temple Mount, because of Har HaBayit, because Har HaBayit is the place in this world where human beings can communicate directly with God. When the Holy Temple, when Beit HaMikdash existed, there was nevuah, there was prophecy there. Human beings were able to communicate directly with God. It was the most uplifting, magnificent experience any human being could ever know. And Bibi Netanyahu is saying that this, the holiest place in the world, the most important place in the world, the reason why the Jews are in the land of Israel. The Jews are in the land of Israel now because of the Temple Mount, not because of Tel Aviv. That's why God brought them back to the land of Israel. And if we don't have a right to the Temple Mount, we have no right to any part of Israel. And Netanyahu is saying Jews have no rights. All of it belongs to the Muslims. We're caving in completely. We're going to give in to all the Muslim Nazi demands. What a disgrace. And shame on all the pathetic Jews who continue to support Netanyahu, who say he's not left-wing, he's under pressure, he's better than the others. Anyone who, as Prime Minister, would do these things, would make these concessions, would engage in this unbelievable complete surrender, is not only not fit to be Prime Minister, is not fit to be called a Jew, is a disgrace to the Jewish people. And all the other parties that are part of his coalition, the Likud, of course, is the ruling party in his coalition, but the other parties that are also part of his coalition, the Jewish Home Party, Shas, they call themselves religious parties. What a bunch of frauds. They don't care about this. They just want money from the government. They want money for their institutions. They want to be ministers, they want to be big machers in the government. That's all they care about. That's all they ever cared about. How desperately we need to have JTF's message reach all the people of Israel before it's too late. We're reaching thousands of people with our message. Between what we do on Facebook and on YouTube and everything else that we do on our main site, on our main news site, we reach thousands of people with our message, but it's not enough. We need to reach all the people of Israel. We need to convince them to wake up because tragic, tragic things are coming. If, God forbid, we don't understand that we are headed in a disastrous direction, that we need to act like a chosen people and a holy nation and a light unto the nations and a nation of priests. That's what the Bible says the Jews are supposed to be. How can the Jews fulfill their destiny when they're not even allowed to pray on Har HaBayit? When they concede to Muslim Nazis who promised to destroy them and exterminate them. They concede to them. Har HaBayit is yours. You are the only ones who can pray. Your religion is the dominant religion. Your religion is the correct religion. This is what Netanyahu is agreeing to. What a disgrace. How can any Jew with an ounce of pride not hang his head in shame when he sees this? Just absolutely horrifying. And so, again, JTF's message, we're doing video. We're going to do videos on all this. We're waking the people of Israel up on all of this as best we can. But this just shows, again, how essential it is that JTF's message reach the people of Israel. That's the first thing I wanted to speak about. And you're going to be seeing a video come out about this. I did a video in English and in Hebrew, so you'll see a video come out about this, as well as other videos that we're doing on the subject of Israel that we've already done, actually, that we're going to be releasing soon in the upcoming days. The second thing I wanted to speak about is the presidential election. You know, now three different polls have shown that Donald Trump is no longer leading in Iowa, which is the first state that's going to be voting on February 1st, 2016. Iowa will have the caucuses. And two polls show Ben Carson now in the lead. And a third poll shows Ben Carson and Donald Trump tied. Our candidate, Ted Cruz, is in third place in two of the polls, and in the third poll he's in fourth place. In two of the polls, Ted Cruz gets 10%, and in the third poll he gets 12%. So he's moving up. Ted Cruz is moving up, Baruch Hashem, in Iowa. And hopefully this is the beginning of an upward trajectory that will lead him to victory. I hope, God willing. But you know, it's just amazing that Iowa Republicans, most of whom are evangelical Christians, are still attracted to people like Ben Carson and Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump is so anti-religious, has such contempt for religion and for all moral values. His whole life reeks of anti-religious contempt. His worshipping of money and materialism. His unbelievable egotism, which is very ungodly and very, very evil behavior, to be egotistical and arrogant like that. And then the positions he took on issues his whole life. And how he made his money with gambling casinos. It's just unbelievable. And then others are attracted to Ben Carson, who, by the way, is not a real Christian. Ben Carson is part of the Seventh-day Adventist, which is a cult. And what they believe in is completely different from Christian belief, and certainly the evangelical Christian belief. So he's actually a member of a Seventh-day Adventist cult. But people are so anxious to find the black guy. They want to support another black guy for president, because the first one worked out so well. So this time they want a Republican version of Barack Hussein Obama. So they're supporting Ben Carson, who says that his goal is the same as Al Sharpton's. And you know, just look at him. He's going to be president of the United States. Have you seen? My name is Ben Carson. And he closes his eyes when he speaks many times. I have a lot of energy. I'm a real leader. My name is Ben Carson. I like Al Sharpton. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm going to be a great leader. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is who they're supporting for president of the United States. This is just unbelievable. They have someone, Ted Cruz, who's a real, consistent, principled conservative, who is a fantastic speaker, a great orator, a great debater, master debater, won all the debating contests in Harvard and Princeton, Ivy League schools. He was the champion debater, even though he was the conservative. And even the leftists there said, no, he's the champion debater. I mean, you know how biased leftists are and how unfair they are when they make their choices. And they gave him that title of champion debater, even though he was always a conservative. Even when he was in school, he was always a conservative. Alan Dershowitz, the left-wing, self-hating Jewish professor at Harvard, said that Ted Cruz was the most brilliant student he ever had. Even though Dershowitz said, I don't agree with him on any issue, on any of the issues, but he was the most brilliant student I ever had, he said. He called him a genius. And Republicans, instead of going for this, instead of having someone like Ted Cruz, a principal, brilliant, great speaker, great debater, candidate like this for president, they want Ben Carson. I'm running for president. Woo-hoo. Or they want Donald Trump. A vulgar, vile, arrogant, lying, flip-flopping piece of garbage. They want him for president. We're going to continue to push. Our English language movement will continue to push for Ted Cruz. Let's hope and pray that he can succeed. And you know, this Wednesday we have a debate. You know, they never give Ted Cruz a fair shot in the debates. In the first two debates, you hardly even heard Ted Cruz speak. They didn't give him a chance to open his mouth. And I'm sure they're going to try to do that again in the third debate. Let's hope something good comes of the third debate this week. But we got to work to wake the people of Israel up, to wake the people of America up. I think you know how important you are, fellow JTFers. You understand how important our message is, how essential it is to the future of the world, to the future of Israel, to the future of the world. I think you know that. And so, let's work together as a team. Help us. Fight with us. Let's work together as a team. When you see our Hebrew and English videos come out, promote those videos everywhere, on Facebook, on YouTube, everywhere you can. Promote the videos. Help us with the videos. Also, make sure to check out our great news pages, our main pages, our news pages, every day. If you speak Hebrew, check out hayamin.org. Check it out every day. Comment on there, because the more comments we get, the more activity we get on there. That helps in the search engine. So help us with our Hebrew main page if you speak Hebrew. If you don't speak Hebrew, then at least go to our English language news page, jtf.org, where Shlomo every day is putting up the greatest articles. It's just, it's a fantastic news page. It's just absolutely fantastic. The best news page on the internet. Help us with our news page. Help us with our videos. And of course, every contribution makes a big difference. The stronger we are, the stronger we are, the better it is for the Jewish people. Why wouldn't you want to strengthen a movement like ours? What could you give to that's more important than this? Every check, every money order, every cash donation sent to our post office box, it does make a difference. It makes us stronger. It helps us reach more people with our message. Some people prefer sending through the mail to our post office box, which is very, very helpful. Other people, just as helpful, other people prefer going to our main Hebrew page and doing it through PayPal with their credit card online for convenience. Either way, it makes no difference to us. You're doing a big mitzvah. You're really, really doing a very blessed deed. You're helping us to reach other people with the truth. You're giving us a chance to wake people up. The more help we have, the more support we have, the more people we reach, the better it is for Israel, the better it is for America and for the world. Help us. Well, we're going to get now to our questions. I think that it's obvious that this is a very critical time for the Jewish people. Let's work together as a team. And together, I think we can make a difference and change history. Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing. Let's get now to our questions. I gotta swing around here in order to be able to see the questions. Our first question is from Yamach Shmoda Islam, who writes, and I quote, thoughts on the following people, and then he lists various people here that he wants comments on. And the first one is Chris Bors, aka the Irate Gamer. I don't know anything about Chris Bors or the Gamer. I mean, he makes comments on video games. But I don't know anything about that. I don't know anything about video games. I don't watch video games. I think it's a waste of time watching video games. And I don't know anything about his comments so I can't really say. The second person is Matt Damon, the actor. Matt Damon, the actor, is a leftist. Matt Damon, the actor, first of all, is untalented in my opinion. I don't think he has any talent. He's an actor. He's a filmmaker. I think his work stinks. But in addition to the fact that I think he himself is completely lacking in any talent, this is someone who has said that Barack Hussein Obama is not left-wing enough. He has criticized Obama. He supported Obama. But he's criticized Obama because he says Obama is not left-wing enough. So obviously he's a piece of garbage. And then we have Doug Walker. Yamach Shmoda Islam asked me to comment on Doug Walker, a.k.a. the Nostalgia Critic. This is a guy who also on YouTube does videos criticizing or reviewing films. I think all films today stink. I think the movies today basically stink. I think almost all of them stink. And I don't know what his reviews are. I've never seen any of his videos. So I can't really say. I'm sorry, I can't comment on him. And finally, Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt is also an actor, completely untalented in my opinion, absolutely worthless. Another leftist. He supported John Kerry for president, supported Barack Hussein Obama. And, you know, his father-in-law is John Voight, who is a good guy. John Voight is someone who is good, who is very pro-Israel, and is a Republican, a good guy, John Voight. But apparently Brad Pitt hasn't learned anything from his father-in-law, because Pitt is a leftist and completely worthless. Thank you, Yamach Shmoda Islam. We go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of all of these stabbings that is going on in Israel? Thanks, unquote. Well, we've done videos, of course, about the situation in Israel, and you're going to be seeing, you're going to see us come out with more of them. This is the result of the appeasement policies of the Netanyahu regime. As long as we have millions of Arabs living in Israel who hate the Jewish people, who want to destroy Israel, this is inevitable. This is what's going to happen. We need a program to kill all Muslim terrorists. All the Muslim terrorists, anyone involved in terrorism should be killed. In addition to that, the millions of Muslims in the general population in Israel should be encouraged to leave with compensation. That's our program. Until you do something like this, this is the type of tragedy that we're going to be facing. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, discuss the homosexual hijacking of the rainbow. Rainbows symbolize the Noahide covenant, which calls for the death penalty for homosexual activity. All right, let's start with that. You know, I don't know why they've taken the symbol, why they took the symbol of the rainbow. I don't know why they decided to do that. There are some who say they took it because of Judy Garland singing Over the Rainbow, as crazy as that sounds, because for some reason Judy Garland was adored. The homosexuals loved Judy Garland. In the 60s, 1960s, 1970s, they loved Judy Garland, all the homosexuals. I don't know why. I honestly don't know why. I don't know if she is... I don't know if she was a lesbian. I don't know. She was married. She didn't say she was. But for some reason, they all loved her. And some people say because she sang Over the Rainbow in The Wizard of Oz that they decided to take the rainbow symbol for that reason. Who knows? And Binyamin now writes, too, wouldn't it make sense if homosexuals boycotted the Dead Sea because it's homophobic? The Dead Sea is a memorial to what happens when countries, Sodom and Gomorrah, are destroyed for homosexuality and turned into a salty, lifeless sea, unquote. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Everything they do makes no sense. I mean, look at what they're doing just anatomically. It makes no sense. Two males or two females, the parts of the body don't fit when they try to have sex. It doesn't fit. It's so obviously against the laws of nature. Male and female, it fits. Male and female, it's obvious that that was what was intended. The same sex, it doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. Everything they're doing is upside down. That's why men are trying to become women, women trying to become men. Everything they're doing is upside down. Everything they're doing is irrational, illogical, goes against the laws of nature, and certainly goes against the laws of God. Thank you, Binyamin. We go now to Gam Bashan Vegam Gilad, who writes, and I quote, hello, dear Chaim, please, your take on Hanan Ashrawi. Thanks, Gam Bashan, unquote. Okay, well, Hanan Ashrawi is a spokesman for the Muslim terrorists. She herself calls herself a so-called Christian. She's a Christian like I'm the Ayatollah of Iran. She is a spokesman for the PLO Fatah terrorists. The reason that she's a spokesman, especially in front of the Western media, is because she happens to speak English well. And so they make her a spokesman. And she's been a regular spokesman for a long time now, for at least 25 years. She's a terrorist. She supports the terrorists. And Israel should liquidate all terrorists, including her. Thank you, Gambashan. And we go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, Trudeau carried a lot of Canada's under 30 evangelical vote, even though Harper is an evangelical Christian, explain, unquote. It's crazy. I mean, there are people, first of all, there are people who call themselves evangelical Christians who don't really believe in anything. I mean, that's one of the situations that you face here. And a lot of young evangelicals mix in with their religious beliefs. They mix in all of these other unbiblical, unreligious, foreign concepts. They make that part of their thinking too. That's why you have so-called evangelical Christians who support sodomite marriage. I mean, you have evangelical Christians who are anti-Semitic, who are anti-Israel, even though you couldn't find a more Zionistic pro-Israel book than the Bible. And yet you have evangelical Christians that are anti-Semitic, that are against Israel and against the Jews. So, you see a lot of illogical things taking place because this constant brainwashing goes on, and it's affected even younger evangelicals. The fact that Trudeau, who is a socialist, a leftist, anti-religious, that he would do well among evangelical voters under the age of 30 in Canada, that's really, really, it's really insane. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, Sodomite History Month is almost over, so please compare. And then there's some people here that Lewinsky Stinks asked me to compare. Okay, and we start out with Prince. Well, Prince denies that he's a homosexual. He certainly looks effeminate, the way he dresses, the way he behaves. And he acts sometimes in an effeminate way. But he denies that he's homosexual. He's been married. He has a son or a daughter. I don't remember, but he has a child. I know he has a child. And I know he's been married. And he denies that he's homosexual. So, I don't know. I don't know what to make out of that. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, Freddie Mercury. Well, Freddie Mercury never denied that he was a homosexual. Freddie Mercury was an out-and-out sodomite who died of AIDS, of course, and Prince and Freddie Mercury, for those of you who don't know, are singers, okay, just so that you know, they're both singers and songwriters. He was a bad person, Freddie Mercury. He was someone who spread immorality in the world. He himself personally paid a price in this world, and we can imagine what's happening to him in the next world, and he spread immorality all over the place. He was a bad person. And finally, Lewinsky Stinks asks about Adam Lambert was on American Idol. He's a singer. He actually has a pretty good voice, unfortunately. I mean, I say unfortunately because he uses his talent for evil purposes, only for evil purposes. He's an evil person. His mother was Jewish. His father was Norwegian, so he's halachically, he's Jewish. And he's an open homosexual, very proud of it. In American Idol, he was going to win. I mean, he had more talent. He got down to the finals. He was in the final two people that were going to be chosen. And he had more talent than the other guy, and everybody was sure he was going to win. All the judges were on his side. Everybody was on his side. In the end, he lost because thank God the audience obviously voted against him because they didn't like the fact that he was a homosexual, that he wears makeup, that he wears lipstick, that he has, what do you call those things on your nails, that he has the things that women wear on their nail polish. I mean, just disgusting. I mean, it was just disgusting. Even though he has a great voice. with a wide range and can sing all types of songs with a really wide range, but just so just effeminate and openly homosexual and flaunting it. And thank God the audience, I mean, that was really encouraging. The audience voted him down, even though he was more talented, but they voted him down because they just couldn't stomach, I think, because they just couldn't stomach his homosexual behavior. So, but that was several years ago. Who knows what would happen now? Who knows? Lewinsky stinks now. Finally, asks most evil sodomite ever: Arafag, Fag Buchanis, Ernst Röhm, or someone else? Unquote. It's a tough choice. There are many, many evil people in history who have been homosexual. I would say Ernst Röhm would probably be the worst on this list because he was the head of the SS, which enabled the Holocaust. He was one of the people that brought Adolf Hitler to power in Germany. Hitler eventually murdered him, killed him. You don't murder evil people, you just kill evil people. Hitler eventually killed him, but he played a big role in bringing Hitler to power. So I would say Ernst Röhm was the most evil on this particular list. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "I read an interview by Arabist Andrei Korotayev discussing parallel cousin marriages among Arabs. He started blaming Jews for it, claiming that cousin marriages were invented by Judaism and spread to Arabs after Jews conquered an Arab peninsula in the 5th century, established Judaism as official religion, and started promoting cousin marriages as ideal," unquote. He's blaming the Jews for spreading... First of all, the Arabs don't just marry cousins, they marry their brothers and sisters. Half-brothers and half-sisters in most cases, but in some cases, brothers and sisters. It's much more than cousins. There are Arab villages where half of the marriages are between brothers and sisters, and so a lot of the babies are born with birth defects. And for him to say that the Jews were imposing their will on the Arabs in the Arabian Peninsula, when everybody knows it was the other way around. I mean, Judaism was not imposed on the Arabian Peninsula. It was the other way around 100%. Muhammad slaughtered the Jews, forced them to either convert or die and cut their heads off, and brags about it in the Quran and brags about it in the Hadith. And before, even before Islam, the Jews lived in their own separate segregated communities in the Arabian Peninsula. I mean, this is just a vicious Jew hater. You know, and they try, all the bad things in the world, they try to blame the Jews for. When in fact, the people who are blaming the Jews are the people that are responsible for these bad things themselves. Thank you, Smash Islam. Now we go to Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, love the Ash JTF video. Mohammed the clock terrorist is headed to Qatar," unquote. Yeah, you remember that? You remember that Mohammed the clock terrorist, he's the kid in school who they said was unfairly accused of building a bomb, even though he made a clock bomb. It looked exactly like a bomb. And he said, "This isn't a bomb. Look, it's not a real bomb." And they arrested him briefly, and they made such a scandal over this, when in fact he and his family are connected to and support Islamic terrorism. They are complete supporters of Islamic terrorism. But Barack Hussein Obama, who's also a Muslim terrorist, invited him to the White House to say, "Look at how Muslims are being persecuted unfairly. Look at how unfair this is." He created a clock that looked exactly like a bomb. And even bomb experts who looked at it said, "Wow, this really looks like a bomb." So of course his teacher got nervous when he came. Someone who's preaching Islam comes to school with something that looks exactly like a bomb. Of course his teacher got nervous, reported him to the authorities, and the authorities briefly detained him, and then let him go when they found that it wasn't a bomb. And the media, and Hollywood, and Barack Hussein Obama, the other Muslim terrorist, made such a fuss over this. Now, he's leaving the United States, because he says the United States is anti-Muslim. We should be so lucky. He says the United States is anti-Muslim, and he says, so he's going now to Qatar. Now, he and all of the people there should all go to the same place. And Gimatria now writes, please tell us about your debate with self-hating Jew. I'm going to say self-hating Jew here. Mike Wallach on the Barry Farber show. Okay, Mike Wallach meaning Mike Wallace. Mike Wallace was in Israel. Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes, from CBS. Yimach shmo v'zichro shem reshaim yirakav. May his name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. This filthy swine, for many years, was an anti-Semitic, a Jewish anti-Semitic reporter for 60 Minutes on CBS. I mean, intermarried, self-hating, anti-Israel to the core, did many reports against Israel. So he decided to go to Israel. This was like 1980, 1981. He decides to go to Israel 35 years ago, and he pays an Arab kid to start throwing rocks at Jews, at Jewish policemen, Jewish soldiers. He says, here, throw rocks, and he pays the Arab teenager to throw rocks so that he could film it and show the heroic Arab resistance to the Israelis, the terrible Israeli oppressors. He was paying a kid to throw rocks. I mean, he's a terrorist, too. He's paying a kid to throw rocks which can kill people? This is what a reporter does? This is the so-called impartial reporter for CBS News for 60 Minutes? So, we decided to debate him. So, Barry Farber wanted to have a debate about this because he said, no, I didn't, it's being misinterpreted what I did. Misinterpreted. He's a liar. He did do it. I mean, there are witnesses, he did it. Then he started denying it. He started saying it was misinterpreted. So Barry Farber had a radio show in New York. He invites Mike Wallace on the show and invites me to come on and debate Mike Wallace on this. So, of course, I kept calling him Mike Wallach, and I kept calling him an anti-Semite, a self-hating Jew. I said, you want to destroy Israel. I called him a cowardly, assimilated, vile enemy of his own people. I mean, I really gave it to him. He said, I am shaken to the core, he said. He said, I am shaken to the core. I said, you deserve to be stripped to the bone. But anyway, we went back and forth, and he was so horrified. He couldn't believe, he thought he's coming on to debate somebody who's going to come on, and I was debating him as a spokesman for the Voice of Jewish Activism. So he thinks, Voice of Jewish Activism, that's probably like AIPAC or the ADL or B'nai B'rith. I'll come on, and then they'll say, oh, you're right, Mike Wallach, you're right, because the ADL exonerated him, of course. The ADL supported him, of course. The ADL, another anti-Semitic organization, the Anti-Defamation League. So he figured he's debating somebody like this. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that that somebody was saying these things to him. And then he even mentioned, he said, the article in the Jewish press that accused me of this was written by Rabbi Meir Kahana. And it was true, Rabbi Kahana was the one who was exposing it in the Jewish press here, who got this issue exposed in the United States. In any event, Mike Wallach then complained to the Federal Communications Commission against Barry Farber show. In those days, you could file complaints to the FCC. He filed a complaint to the FCC. You could still file complaints to the FCC, but they don't, you know, they're not going to do anything about it. But he filed a complaint to harass Barry Farber, and Barry Farber got so much flack from leftists over this. You know, he said, why do you get, you know, Barry Farber likes to put on that North Carolina, he likes to pretend that he has a North Carolina accent, even though he lived in New York most of his life. But anyway, he's another character. But anyway, Barry Farber says, why'd you do that to me? Why'd you put him on? He complained to the FCC against me. I didn't know you were going to say those things. Well, anyway, nothing happened, and it was good for Barry Farber. He got Barry Farber admitted it was great ratings. He said that show, he said for days after that, he said the lines were lit up. He said the ratings were great, so it was actually good for him. But you know how people are intimidated and. But that's the story of the debate that I had with Mike Wallach, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, who now is in a very warm place. Thank you, Gematria. We go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, 1. Itifada, 50% off lunch if Jew eats with Arab, unquote. This is a self-hating Jewish owner of a restaurant in Israel who says he'll give you 50% off the lunch if a Jew eats together with an Arab, he'll give them 50% off the lunch if Jews and Arabs eat together. I hope, you know, I hope that he should choke on all of the food there in his restaurant. And everyone who goes into his restaurant should choke on their food. Okay? This is someone who wants Jews to eat with the Amalekite enemies of the Jewish people that are committed to exterminating Jews, that wants people to eat with the Arab enemy of the Jewish people. He should choke on his food, and all the Jews and everyone else who goes to eat in his restaurant, if they know about it. If they're ignorant, I wouldn't, you know, somebody could go in and just not know about this. If they're ignorant, of course, I wouldn't wish anything bad on them. But if they know about this and they still go and give even one penny or one shekel to this animal whose restaurant should be boycotted, they should choke on the food together with the owner of the restaurant. Dr. Dan now writes, too, who was worse, the people who died in the flood or the people who built Babel? Unquote. Okay, that's a great question. Dr. Dan is referring to two events that we're reading about now in our parashiot, in the Bible portions that we read now, that we read every week. The flood, Hamabul, was a punishment for the fact that the people of the world had become very evil. And so God decided he had to punish the world with a flood. Now, whether or not the entire world was flooded, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if that's symbolic or if that was real, the entire world was flooded. But there certainly was a huge flood that did take place about that time. And that is something that is written about in many different cultures. So there was a huge flood. There's no question about it. There was huge flooding in many different places. Whether it was all over every inch of the world and every single person and every single being was killed. And that I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that there was a huge phenomenon. There was a huge phenomenon like that that took place at that time. And why did God decide to punish people with this Mabul, with this flood? Because people were doing only evil. Just evil behavior all the time. And, you know, we're taught that the reason why they had to be killed, the people had to be killed in the flood, was because of Gezel, because they were stealing. Gezel is stealing. Why? I mean, they were doing all types of other terrible things. Why just Gezel? Why were they, you know, they were committing immoral acts sexually, they were committing other terrible immoral acts. Why just Gezel? Why was this the thing that sealed their fate? Because when God wants to punish somebody to teach them a lesson, because of his mercy, he usually starts off by punishing them financially. He'll give them a financial setback. He'll make something happen to their stock or their bond or their property or something else, their business. Something will go wrong. They'll have some sort of setback to warn them. They get some setback. God usually will start by giving them a material warning, a warning for their property, rather than killing them or physically or making them sick or doing something to them physically. Because of his mercy, he instead will start off with that. The problem was these people, the property these people had was all stolen because they were all thieves. The whole world were just thieves. Everybody stealing from everybody. The whole world were thieves. Everybody in all these cultures around the world were thieves. And so the property wasn't theirs. So he couldn't punish them by doing something bad to their property because it wasn't their property and they wouldn't feel as bad. When you work hard to create something, if something bad happens to what you've worked so hard to create, if you've worked very hard and you earn $1 million and you work all your life and you really work and struggle and you spend 10 years or 20 years making $1 million, and you lose $1 million, you're going to feel horrible. You're going to feel terrible. Some people are so devastated. Some people, God forbid, commit suicide, which of course is crazy. But some people commit suicide when things like that happen. That's devastating to somebody. But if, let's say you have a different situation. You have one person who worked hard to earn $1 million, and he loses $1 million. Devastating event in his life. Devastating. Something that will greatly traumatize that person. Then you have a second person who's also worth $1 million, also has $1 million, but he stole $1 million. He got it dishonestly, he stole it, and he loses it. He's also going to feel badly that he lost it, But it's not the same. It's not the same devastating blow. And so God was not able to use the punishment against the people before the flood, the generation of the flood. He was not able to use the punishment of hurting them financially and hurting them with property because all their property was stolen. Almost all their property was stolen. So the only thing he had left, the only thing God had left, was to punish them with the ultimate punishment because they'd been so evil and all their property was stolen and everything they had done was evil. The only thing he had left was to eliminate them and start again. And so that was why in the Mabul we're taught that the Mabul, meaning Hamabul is the flood. That's why we're taught that in the Mabul that God had to eliminate that generation. We're taught that the thing that really, really sealed their fate was the fact that they were all thieves and all stealing from each other. Now, in the generation of Bavel, in the generation of Migdal Bavel means the Tower of Babel, this was a generation that decided Nimrod was their leader, and they decided, let's build this giant edifice, this giant building, and it's going to go all the way up to heaven. They thought that they could reach heaven with the building. Because when you know, nowadays we know how far up heaven is. We know that, you know, you go up to the sky, it just goes up and up and up, miles and miles. But in those days, they didn't know how far it is. They figured, you'll build it and you'll touch the clouds or touch the sky. And, you know, they didn't know in ancient times. In the primitive people in those days, in this particular generation, they didn't know any better. They figured they could actually touch the sky. And they would build a building there in defiance of God. And that this would become the project, this would become the most important project in the world. God, we're taught that God didn't destroy them. That God only scattered them and made them learn different languages. He scattered them into different cultures and made them learn different languages, split them up into different nations. That was their punishment. Because, and the reason he did this, and this is going to be a little complicated. The reason he did this is because they had achdut, they had unity, we're taught. That's what the rabbis teach us. Despite the fact that they were doing evil, and that they were rebelling against God, the fact that they were united, that they were like brothers working together on a common project, God admired the fact that they were united. And God wanted to teach a lesson to future generations that unity for a good cause will bring great reward. This was unity for a bad cause, and God didn't destroy them because of the fact that they were united. He punished them because they were doing something evil. He scattered them and gave them different languages, but he didn't destroy them because they were united as a reward for the fact that they knew they had enough discipline to be united and to work together as brothers for a common cause, even though it was an evil cause. And so the lesson in this is, if being united for a bad cause saved them, imagine the reward if you're united. If a people is united for a good cause, imagine what God's reward would be. It would be a reward beyond anything that we can imagine. That's the lesson of Bavel. Who is more evil in the end? The people in the flood, of course, got a much more severe punishment. They were destroyed and killed. But you can argue that the people in Bavel were more evil in certain respects. You know, I would say probably the people in the flood. Probably the people in the flood, because they even stabbed their own brothers and sisters in the back in order to steal and rob, and everybody was backstabbing and taking from the other. So I would say probably the people in the flood, and that's probably why they had a more severe punishment. Dr. Dan now writes 3, Dvar Torah. Dvar Torah means a word of the Torah, to speak about something in the Torah. Okay. Face the camera here. Avraham Avinu, Abraham, the father of the Jewish people. He was the first Jew in the world. We're taught that in his generation, almost everybody in his generation believed in idolatry, believed in Avodah Zarah, which means idolatry. that his name was Abraham HaYivri, Abraham the Hebrew, because the word Ivri comes from Ever in Hebrew, which means side. Because he was on one side, the rabbis teach us, and the whole world was on the other side. He was willing to go it alone for his principles. In other words, his actions were not poll-driven. He wasn't interested in winning popularity contests. He was interested in the truth. He loved his fellow human beings, wanted to help them, wanted to save them, wanted to wake them up, and wanted to be popular. But he was a person with principles and a person who was committed and devoted to the truth. That was more important to him than popularity. And when he was 3 years old, he already started questioning. Even when he was 3 years old, he already started questioning, who is running this beautiful world we have? Look at this magnificent world. And he continued that questioning process until the age of 48. Finally, at the age of 48, he concluded absolutely there has to be just one God. But anyway, let me tell you a story of something that happened when he was a child. He knew there was one God before then, but he absolutely concluded at the age of 48, he had no doubt and absolutely started preaching and actually was ready to prepare for eventually preaching that. He preached it at the age of 52. I don't want to go into too much detail about that right now because I want to tell you a story of what happened when he was a young man. When he was a young man, his father was Terach. Terach, Abraham's father, Avraham's father, was not only someone who was involved with Avodah Zarah, with idol worship. Both of his parents were idolaters. Not only was his father an idolater, his father owned the biggest store in his area to sell idols. His father was that was the place where you went to buy your idols, at his father's store. This is how his father had it. This was the family business, was selling idolatry and promoting idolatry. So one day, Terach had to go somewhere. He had to travel out of town. So he said to Avraham, his son, you watch over the store, and if somebody comes, you sell them the idol. You come and you sell them the idol if they come to the store. So Avraham is there, and his father leaves, and a woman comes to the store, this woman who's 60 years old. And she says, here's some food. I want you to make this sacrifice to the idol. Give this sacrifice to this idol over here. And Avraham said, you're 60 years old, and you're going to make a sacrifice to an idol that's one day old? We just created this idol today. You're 60, and you're sacrificing to an idol that's one day old? And so he took her food, and he convinced her that this was nonsense, and she left, and he convinced her this was nonsense. But he took her food and decided to put the food down in the middle, and took a giant hammer that they had in the store, and smashed all of the idols in his father's store, hundreds of idols, smashed all of the idols except for the biggest idol, the biggest and the strongest and the most expensive idol. He didn't smash. He took the hammer and put the hammer in the hand of the biggest, strongest idol. Put the hammer in this big idol's hand, and all the other idols were smashed and destroyed in the store, except for this one biggest idol. His father comes back and sees all the family business destroyed. All the idols are smashed and destroyed, except for this one biggest idol, and the hammer is in the hand of this biggest idol. He says to Avraham, what did you do? What have you done to my business? What did you do? And Avraham says, I didn't do it. This woman came to make a sacrifice to bring food, and all the idols started fighting about who's going to eat the food. They all started fighting with each other. And finally, the biggest idol, you see here with the hammer in his hand, the biggest idol, the biggest and strongest one, smashed all the other idols. He destroyed all the other idols so that he could have the food for himself. It was the big idol who did it. I didn't do it. It was the idol who did it. And so his father said to him, what, are you kidding me? These idols can't even move. They can't speak or move or think. And they're going to go smashing each other for the food? I mean, what, are you joking? What, do you think I'm a fool? What are you giving me these stories for? And so Avraham said, if they can't think or move or eat or do anything else, why are you worshiping them? Why are you giving them credit for the creation of the universe? Don't you realize they're just wood and stone? Don't you realize there's nothing to them? That was the beginning of Avraham's struggle for monotheism, for the belief that there's just one God. His father ended up reporting him to Nimrod. Nimrod was the king at that time. Nimrod, the same guy who wanted to build the Tower of Babel, he was the king also at this time. He was still the king. And his father reported him to Nimrod, and there was a confrontation between Abraham and Nimrod, and Abraham was thrown into an oven by Nimrod in the end, and survived, miraculously survived. He didn't burn. He miraculously survived, which was the first of the 10 tests that Abraham in the end was going to have. Aseret ha-nisyonot. 10 tests that God made him go through. And he passed all the tests with flying colors and went on to become the example, the leader for the Jewish people, the creator of Torah Judaism. Anyway, that's the story of Abraham and Terach, and it's a Torah story. By the way, we have Torah is the oral Torah and the written Torah. The oral Torah is where you find the story that I just told you, and many other vital details on things that happen in the Tanakh, in the Bible. So that's our Dvar Torah for this week. Let me move back here, and I want to thank once again Dr. Dan. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Your opinion of the current Tag Mechir movement in Israel. They appear to be Arab Muslim worshipping self-hating Jews. Were they always like that?" Unquote. Chicago Jew, I think you're mixing them up with somebody else. Tag Mechir are the underground Jews that are fighting against the Arab Muslims, that are fighting against the self-hating actions of the Israeli government. So I think you're mixing them up with somebody else. Tag Mechir, God forbid, they are not self-hating Jews by any means. These are the underground Jewish fighters in Israel. Thank you, Chicago Jew. We go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom, Reb Chaim. Please discuss," and then we have certain people here. We start out with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Okay. Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Schwarzenegger, he's the actor and the bodybuilder who became the governor of California. He was the original Donald Trump. This is Donald Trump. Okay? Why is he Donald Trump? Because he ran the same way Donald Trump is running. No logic, all emotion. I'm tough. I'm going to do for California. I will do this. I will improve things for California. You know, he ran, and despite the fact that it was so obviously a bluff, he ran as a tough guy, insulted everybody in the debate. He had a debate. He insulted everybody in the debates. He insulted the media, insulted everybody, and the people of California loved it, and they elected him because they thought he's an outsider. He's going to bring change to California. He did bring change to California. He nearly destroyed the state. He nearly destroyed the state of California. Nobody likes him now in California. His approval ratings are in the basement now. Nobody supports him now. He was a catastrophe for California. But he was the original Donald Trump. And by the way, he was a Republican. He was a Republican and ran as a Republican. And so it just shows you, you know, what happens when you elect somebody like this. I'm all in favor of electing an outsider. Ted Cruz is an outsider, even though he was elected to the Senate. He's still an outsider because he's fighting against them and he wants to defeat them. But electing somebody who is so obviously a fake, phony fraud, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, or like Donald Trump, is a disaster. And Arnold Schwarzenegger is an example of what we're going to get with Donald Trump. The results are going to be very, very disappointing. And Hiram now says, Russell Crowe as Noah. Okay. Russell Crowe is an actor who played the part of Noah from the flood. Noach in Hebrew. Noah in Hebrew is Noach. Noach is the symbol of righteous Gentiles in the Bible. When Gentiles are righteous, they're called Bnei Noach, the children of Noah. And the laws, the commandments that the Torah has for the Gentiles are called Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, the seven commandments for the children of Noah. So Noah is the symbol. He's the symbol of righteousness for the Gentiles in the Bible. For Russell Crowe to play a figure like this when he is a leftist Obama-supporting piece of garbage. I mean, he is the opposite. He is the antithesis of a righteous Gentile, Russell Crowe. So, obviously, the film and Russell Crowe, all a farce. Hiram now asks, are Prince Charles and CIA Director Brennan closet Muzzies, unquote? Well, it would seem so, because they always defend the Muslims, and everything they do is just disastrous for, certainly for Israel, the Jews, Western civilization, for Europe, for everybody. I mean, they're disastrous people, they're disastrous figures. I don't think they're closet Muslims, I think they're just phony, fake opportunists who would sell their mother out for their position. Prince Charles wants to become the King of England and wants to be popular, and he has no principles. He's a lowlife like all the royalty, the so-called royalty in Britain. Complete lowlives. Completely evil. They supported Hitler in the 1930s. They were Nazis. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting, and they continue to be disgusting. I don't think he's a closet Muslim, but he's certainly a sellout in every respect with no principles. And Brennan, from the CIA, is the ultimate. I mean, this is Barack Hussein Obama's CIA director. I mean, the ultimate sellout, the ultimate fraud, the ultimate evil person who, whether it comes to the Iran nuclear bomb making deal, on every single issue, he brings nothing but catastrophe and danger and greater danger to the world. Just pure evil. Thank you, Hiram. We move on now to Black Sabbath, who writes, and I quote, Shalom. Please discuss, and then there are four people here. We start out with Karl Marx. Well, Karl Marx, of course, was the person who created modern communism. He wrote the Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital. He created modern communism. His parents were self-hating Jews who converted to Christianity, or what they, so-called Christianity. His parents converted. They left the Jewish faith. And whenever you have a situation like that, when you ever have Jews who are rats, who leave their own people and run to other religions or want to convert, I can guarantee you that they're going to betray not only the Jewish people, they're going to betray everybody. Because if a Jew is a rat toward his people, he's going to be a rat toward everybody in the end. I mean, those types of Jews are the worst. And we saw what Karl Marx did. The son of converts, you know, who pretended to leave the Jew, who left Judaism and pretended to become Christians. We saw what comes out of that, what that produces. Produced the catastrophe of Karl Marx and the catastrophe of communism, which led to the murder of untold tens of millions of people, to the enslavement of one-third of the human race. One-third of the world was under the control of communism. And just to terrible consequences for all of humanity. Black Sabbath now asks about Sandra Bernhardt. Ugh. Sandra Bernhardt. Well, she's another self-hating Jew. She's a lesbian comedian. She calls herself a comedian. I don't think she's funny. She's just nauseating. She's a lesbian who promotes, of course, the radical gay agenda, the sodomite agenda, and filthy, dirty, nasty in every way, a lowlife. Black Sabbath now asks about Judah Maccabee. Uh-huh. Yehuda HaMaccabee in Hebrew. Yehuda HaMaccabee, he's the one who led the Maccabean revolt, the revolt of the Maccabees, that we commemorate with the holiday of Chanukah every year. The Syrian Greeks, a huge empire, invaded little Israel, vastly outnumbering the Jews, and most of the Jews gave in and accepted their culture and agreed to become what were called Jewish Hellenists, which means idolatry, worshipping idols, giving up Judaism, giving up the Torah. And Yehuda HaMaccabee and a small group of Jews started a rebellion and fought against the Syrian Greeks and against the traitor Jewish Maccabees. They killed the traitor Jewish Maccabees. They were killing them and beat them in war and defeated the huge Syrian Greek Empire. So it was an incredible, miraculous victory against all odds. You know, like Jewish history, fighting against all odds, hopelessly outnumbered, and they won. That's what we commemorate during Hanukkah. So Yehuda HaMakabi was certainly one of the great figures of history. And finally, Dr. William Pierce, Black Sabbath asks about that. William Pierce, doctor. William Pierce was one of the Nazi leaders in the United States. He was the head of the, he worked in the American Nazi Party, then he broke away, he formed his own Nazi organization. And he was a Nazi. Thank God he's now burning in hell. I think he, I don't know, I don't remember exactly when he died, but I know he died years ago. And he's now, of course, burning in hell. And that's, you know, the end consequences for people who decide to join Amalek and decide to fight against God. Because if you fight against the Jews, you're fighting against God. You're fighting against the God of the Bible. Thank you, Black Sabbath. We move now to Surgical Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please talk about Ethiopia and the Ethiopian people and their roots, biblical, historical, and present significance, unquote. Well, I'm not an expert on the subject of Ethiopia and the Ethiopian people. I know that there are Jews who lived in Ethiopia. There are brothers and sisters. The Jews who lived there are definitely our brothers and sisters. Ethiopia did have an advanced civilization in ancient times. There's no question about that. They had a very advanced civilization. And in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, there was trade between Israel and Kush and that whole area of Africa. So they were a pretty advanced, educated, highly developed nation in ancient times. Later on, that all collapsed and fell apart, and today, for a long time now, Ethiopia has been a third world African country. And unfortunately, one of the things they do is they try to export people, together with other countries in that area, they want to export illegal aliens from that country into the land of Israel, which we should not allow. If someone is Jewish, if there's an Ethiopian Jew should be welcomed into the land of Israel. Black Africans that just want to get into Israel because the standard of living is better should not be allowed into the land of Israel. That should be the standard. We have one small Jewish homeland, and that homeland is for the Jewish people. We don't want to be overrun by other people who have a different culture and who would dilute the significance of the Jewish return to the land of Israel. Ethiopia today is a mess. I mean, it's a third world country. It's a mess. There's constant starvation and poverty and wars and tragedy there. It's a very tragic situation over there today. Thank you very much, Surgical Jew. And we go now to Nekama, who writes, and I quote, Dechayim, please discuss one, personal hygiene in the Quran. Okay, unquote. Well, obviously, there isn't any personal hygiene in the Quran. Anybody that lives among Arab Muslims knows that. The hygienic situation there is as bad as you can get. I don't even know if the Quran even discusses hygiene. I don't even remember. I read the Quran years ago. But I don't even remember if the Quran discusses hygiene or if it's in the hadith. But the only thing they do is rinse themselves with clear water, you know. And they're known. Look, you go to Muslim areas, it's known they're known to have a serious problem with diseases and cleanliness. They're known to have serious problems. They're known to have serious problems. So the Quran clearly is not something that gives you. For instance, the type of rules that the Torah gives us. Our Torah, cleanliness is a very important part of Judaism. Very important part. If someone is not physically clean, they're not supposed to say their prayers. They're not supposed to be included in the minyan. You know, physical cleanliness is an essential part of Judaism. It's part of our way of life. But in the Muslim religion, that's not true. Nekama now asks, too, about Adam Sherniakov, Adam Shaniakow was the head of the Warsaw Ghetto Judenrat, who committed suicide in 1942. He was ordered to help the Germans transport the Jews to the death camps. He committed suicide. He was a Jewish leader for many years. It would have been nice if he and the other people who were Jewish leaders had warned the Jews to instead do a number of things. First of all, they should have gone on Aliyah to Israel. They could have. If they had all supported Jabotinsky and they had all been willing to go on Aliyah to Israel. Well, I mean, if all the Jews of Europe had done that, there wouldn't have been a Holocaust. There would not have been a Holocaust, and we could have had a Jewish state before then. We could have done it. But the Jews didn't support Jabotinsky. They would rather live in Warsaw and Poland, so terrible consequences. So first thing, he didn't encourage Aliyah to Israel. Second thing, he didn't encourage the Jews to arm themselves and train themselves. Jabotinsky said, Jews, learn to shoot. Let's form an NRA here in Poland. Learn to shoot, get weapons, get guns. If all the Jews had been armed, then the resistance we saw in the Warsaw Ghetto, if you had millions, 6 million Jews resisting like that, the Germans would have had a very hard time. And certainly you wouldn't have had 6 million being murdered then. It certainly would have been a lot less than that. But anyway, he didn't do that. In the end, he didn't want to assist, though, in the transfer of Jews to the death camps, so he wound up committing suicide. He's a tragic figure. He's a very tragic figure in Jewish history. Third person is Tilhas Tizik Gershefdin. Okay, Tilhas Tizik Gershefdin. Actually, it's Tizi Gershefdin. Tilhas Tizi Gershefdin, because Tilhas Tizi comes from Arabic, actually. I think that's Arabic. Yeah, it's from the Arabic. This is a Jewish group that was formed in Europe after the Holocaust, after World War II. And they claim that they executed German Nazis, and they claim that they were helping with the Aliyah, helping the Haganah. They were, but you know, number one, why did they form this group after the Holocaust? Wouldn't it have been much better to have this group before the Holocaust, like Beitar and Jabotinsky, and the Jabotinsky supporters said that the Jews should do? Wouldn't that have been better? I mean, after 6 million Jews already murdered, now you form a group? Would have been a lot nicer if they'd formed this group before the Holocaust, to prevent the Holocaust. Or during the Holocaust as well, or during the Holocaust to fight against the murderers of the Jews. But instead, when it's all over 6 million Jews are murdered, then they decide to form a group. So that's number one. And number two, more importantly, they were aligned with the Haganah. The Haganah was the group that was taken over by David Ben-Gurion, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, and Chaim Weizmann, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, the Jewish leaders, the Jewish establishment leaders, that were responsible for the Holocaust. These are the Jewish leaders that sold the Jews out. These are the Jewish leaders that made the Holocaust possible. These are the Jewish leaders that did not support the Jabotinsky program of fighting for the creation of a Jewish state before the Holocaust, of creating Jewish underground and militia groups armed, by the way, by Poland and Eastern European countries, were willing to arm the Jewish militia groups because they wanted to get the Jews out of their countries. So they wanted there to be a Jewish state. Jabotinsky went to these anti-Semitic Eastern European leaders in Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, and got them to give weapons and arm and train Jewish fighters in order to throw the British out of the land of Israel, because Jabotinsky said, you help me do this, we'll create a Jewish state, then we can bring all the Jews from Poland and all these other countries, we can bring them to Israel. You won't have a Jewish problem anymore. We'll have a Jewish state, and your country won't have Jews anymore, which is what you want. So he got weapons and arming and training and everything else from these countries, but he didn't have enough support to make it happen. If he had had more support from the Jews, and especially financial support, he didn't have financial support. You know, Jabotinsky was leading the effort to prevent the Holocaust. He was the leader of the right-wing Jews, and he didn't have enough money even for his own personal needs. He had to go have a full-time job. While he was doing this, he had to be diverted by a full-time job just to eat, just to support himself and his family. That's how little money he raised. Because all the money Jews were giving to the left, and Ben-Gurion, and Chaim Weizmann, and the respectable, and this is respectable, and that's respectable, and after all, you have to do it right, and you have to be a diplomat, and you have to be a statesman, and you shouldn't. Don't shout, don't curse, don't do this, don't push, don't do this, it's not nice. You know, those are the people that got all the Jewish money. And look at the consequences. So this group that was formed, Tilhas Tizi Geschäftin, they're aligned with the Haganah that murdered Jewish Holocaust survivors on the Alta Lena. The Haganah murdered them in cold blood. That worked with the British, had joint patrols of the British to keep the Jews out of the land of Israel. That turned over Jewish freedom fighters in the Irgun and in the Stern group to the British to be hanged. And these are the people that they align themselves with. I'm not impressed with a group like that, to tell you the truth, to say the least. Thank you, Nekama. And now we go to Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, should Ted Cruz attack Donald Trump, and is there anything Cruz could learn from Trump, unquote. I don't think he should attack Donald Trump, no. I don't think he should attack Donald Trump, because I think his strategy of trying to get Trump supporters is a good one. We, as his supporters, can attack Donald Trump. We can do it. But but I don't think Ted Cruz himself should do it, no. Because I don't want to see him burn himself with Trump supporters. Is there anything Cruz can learn from Trump? You can learn a lot from Trump. Trump is not a good guy. He would be a terrible leader, terrible president. But he certainly knows how to control the media. And the way he attacks people, in many cases, the way he attacks people is something we can learn a lot from. He goes after them and he puts people on the defensive. So there are lessons that can be learned from that. Absolutely. Absolutely. How he captures so much media attention. How he creates such interest and high ratings from the media, and how he attacks people. These are things we can learn from, that Cruz can learn from. Cruz is being more cautious, because Cruz thinks in the end that the way Trump is doing things, the overall way that Trump is conducting himself will lead to defeat in the end, which I think is true. So Cruz is being more cautious than Trump, and running more of a well-planned, coordinated campaign. But I think there are tactical things you can learn. There are tactical lessons you can learn from Trump, yes. Thank you, Maimonides. And now, Mr. VSS writes, and I quote, Chaim, what is your opinion of the law which mandates a $15 per hour salary for fast food employees, unquote. I'm against any minimum wage. I think the minimum wage law is unconstitutional, illegal, undemocratic, outrageous. I'm completely against minimum wage laws. In my opinion, if you have a business, you should be able to offer your workers whatever you want to offer them. I don't care what it is. If you want to offer them 5 cents or if you want to offer them $5 million, you have your own business. You should not be forced to pay a certain wage. You should be able to say, this is what I want to pay. This is my business. I'm going to make my own decision. You want it, you can work for me. You don't want it, you don't have to work for me. And the workers also have freedom in that situation, because they don't have to take the job. But in a free society, with a free market, the boss and the workers, between themselves, they should be able to decide what the wage is going to be. No worker should be forced to work for anybody. And no boss should be forced to pay any salary he doesn't want to pay. It should be a true free market. Also, when you have a minimum wage, it causes higher unemployment. Why? Because let's say I have a business and I can't afford to pay people $15 per hour. I'm not going to hire people if that happens. If I can only pay $10 an hour, that means the people that I would have hired for $10 an hour, now I'm not going to hire them because the wage is too high. And so unemployment causes more unemployment, especially among young people getting into the workforce. This causes unemployment. So it's a bad thing. Thank you, Mr. VSS. And now we go to Imaknik, who writes, and I quote, your opinion on what Bibi said about the Arabs and the Holocaust. Even though it is true, Bibi shouldn't say Hitler did not want to kill Jews, unquote. Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. And we're going to be releasing a video in Hebrew and in English on this subject, by the way. But I agree with you. I agree with everything you said just now. I agree that what Bibi said is true about the Mufti, but I think for him to say Hitler didn't want to kill the Jews, didn't want to murder the Jews, I think what he should have said is Hitler's original plan was to throw the Jews out of Europe, get them to go to Israel, and then he thought he was going to conquer the world after he conquered Europe, and once he conquered the world, When he conquers Israel, then he was going to exterminate all the Jews in one place in Israel. That was his plan. But his initial plan was first get the Jews out of the way, get them out of Europe so we can win the war. That would have been good for us. Because if all the Jews were out of Europe and went to Israel, we'd have a Jewish state. Hitler was never going to get to Israel. God protected Israel. So Hitler was never going to make it going to Israel. The problem was the Mufti is... Bibi did not tell the true story that Hitler's end goal was to murder the Jews, but just not in Europe. So the Mufti did play a role because he said, no, murder them all in Europe. A second thing that Bibi neglected to mention. The real reason why Hitler and Germany started murdering the Jews and started the Holocaust was not just because of the persuasive powers of the Mufti, although the Mufti, I think, did play a role. He did definitely play a role in the Holocaust. But the real reason why they said we have to murder all the Jews here in Europe is because they said we can't get them into Israel. The British have closed the doors. No other country in the world will accept them. Nobody wants them. Nobody wanted the Jews. So we have to murder them here in Europe because we're not going to be able to get them out of Europe anyway. We can't get them out of Europe because no one else will accept them. So the real reason there was a Holocaust is because there was no realistic plan for getting the Jews out of Europe. If there had been a realistic plan for getting the Jews out of Europe before the Holocaust started, the Germans were willing to just get the Jews out of the way for now so they could win the war. They were willing to do that at first. So the Holocaust could have been prevented. Bibi didn't say that. He wouldn't say that because he doesn't want to offend the British and the Americans and the others who closed the doors to Jews escaping from Nazi-occupied Europe. He doesn't want to offend them. He doesn't want to offend Roosevelt and Churchill and all the other murderers who were also responsible for the Holocaust. Thank you, Imaknik. And we go now to Confederate Kahanis, who writes, and I quote, Der Chaim, who is more dangerous, Ron Paul or Buchanan? I think Buchanan is more dangerous because he appeals to angry white men. Thanks, unquote. I think both of them appeal to angry people. Maybe. That may be true. Both of them distort conservatism and distort the right. Then neither one of them are right wing. They're both left wing. But they distort what the right is supposed to stand for in their own crazy way. Buchanan, of course, is someone who defends Hitler and the Nazis and wrote a book defending Hitler and the Nazis. He wrote a book saying that Hitler was misunderstood. And he has said that Hitler was courageous. That has made statements praising Hitler. He's a Holocaust denier. He's also someone who has defended the Nazi war criminals. So he's a Nazi, Buchanan. No question about that. Ron Paul is a defender of Islamic terrorism and supports the enemies of Israel and of America. I don't know. I think one. I think right now, one good thing is that Buchanan, at least, you know, he's old, he's not going to be around much longer, God willing, and he's not going to run again. Whereas Ron Paul, through his son Rand, is still a presence. He's still a presence and still doing damage. So, I don't know. I think both of them are still dangerous figures. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And I want to thank everybody for another program that we very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.